Welcome to the Magic Potion Podcast, where a sprinkle and a dash can enhance your class. Listen to learn about tools, techniques, and stories from educators on ways to improve your lessons, create a positive culture, and much more. I'm your host, Kevin Reinemann, and now it's time to make it happen. Hello and welcome to episode 46 of Magic Potion EDU, creating a new reality with Michael Fricano. And you know what? I just remembered, I forgot to ask you how you pronounce your name. So Michael, could you introduce yourself and let the audience know who you are and what your background in education is?
You are one of the very rare people that pronounced it correctly the first time.
Yes. Wow.
Thanks, Kevin.
I get that all the time with mine. It's like, is it Reinemann? Reinemann? What is it? It's Reinemann. Reinemann.
So my name is Michael Fricano II, and I'm coming to you guys from Hawaii, beautiful state of Hawaii. I live on the island of Oahu, and I teach at a K-12 private school in the heart of Honolulu as a K-6 design and technology teacher.
That does not sound bad at all.
No.
What's the temperature there right now?
Oh man, it's probably about high 70s.
Yeah. So we're at 37. We're at 37 in Ohio right now, in northern Ohio. So we are half of what you are. So the school you work at seems to be, from what I followed, ever changing and seems to be growing in the, I don't know, probably 2 years I've been watching it. You guys seem to be doing new and great things consistently, especially that maker space that you're working in. So what's the history of that space like, and what's the cool stuff you have in it?
Well, the history is very short, because the space that I'm working in this year, we literally just opened it this school year. It's been under construction the past year and a half or so. Been in the works for about 5 years or so, but it's brand new this year. It's a pretty amazing space. We built two new buildings in our K-6 side of our campus. We consider that our lower school, and one building is our science. It's a two-story, so science. New science classrooms on the bottom floor, and then the top floor, about half of the top floor is our new K-6 design and technology lab. And then we have a religion class and a temporary third grade classroom up there this year. And then the second building is our new dance and music studio.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I definitely can't complain. But we do have, when I started at that school about 6 years ago, maybe about, I want to say a couple years prior to that, they had opened up an upper school building called the, drawing a blank here. Well, it was a brand new building. The bottom floor, the entire bottom floor is considered the upper school iLab, which is its own makerspace. And I was fortunate enough to work out of that space for a couple of years. And I taught a high school class out of there, which was sort of like an introduction to the makerspace, and had a lot of fun with that. But my passion lies with the elementary grades, which is where I started my education career. And so I was able to snag a position back down in our lower school a couple years ago, and I've been there ever since. It's been a lot of fun.
How many students are in your school?
So we're a K-12 school. We have, I think, just over 2,000 students, K-12. And then in our lower school, I want to say we have about 600 or 700 students in our K-6 grade levels.
That's got to be a lot of fun on a day-to-day basis. Plus, you can probably go outside and do stuff like,
oh yeah,
on a whim almost. Can't get that everywhere in the United States.
Yeah, so especially in Hawaii. space is tight in Hawaii.
What's the, how close are you to the ocean?
Oh, not too far. Like we're pretty much in the middle of Honolulu, just down the, maybe a couple blocks or so from Waikiki, which is right on the water's edge, pretty much. So probably like, you know, like a 5 minute drive to a beach.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got quite a bit further drive to get to any beach, let alone to an ocean. Oh, so when you went off to college, what were you originally going for?
So, yeah. So when I started college and finished college in Hawaii. So, I'm what you would consider an Air Force brat. So my dad's retired Air Force. And as soon as I finished high school, my brother and I finished high school, we moved with my parents to Hawaii, where my dad's last assignment was at Hickam Air Force Base on Oahu. And I started college there. So I did some college courses on the base for a year or two. And then I moved to the University of Hawaii. And that entire time, initially my plan was to be a high school computer science teacher.
Okay.
Because I had some really awesome, I had a really awesome computer science teacher at my high school, which really helped drive my decision to become a teacher as well. But when I started going to college in Hawaii at that time, the requirements to be a computer science high school teacher were to get both your teaching degree and a computer science degree separately. And I thought that was too much. So I switched my direction and decided, you know what, I think I'll just get my teaching degree and I'll aim to become an elementary school teacher.
Okay. So
I kind of, in the beginning, I kind of took the easy road, but it's led me down an amazing path. And at that time when I made that decision, of course, you had to have some, you know, some experience working with elementary age children. So I got a job with the YMCA, and for pretty much my entire college career, I worked as a group leader in after school programs and summer programs, and eventually made my way to program director positions, things like that. And I really found my passion with elementary age students, especially kindergarten, surprisingly.
Nice.
I love teaching and working with kindergartners. I did that most of my college career. I work with kindergartners. And that sort of led me down that path as an elementary school teacher. And technology has always been my passion. I've always loved working with technology, building with technology. I became a fourth and fifth grade teacher at the beginning of my teaching career, and soon after that moved into a computer, a technology computer teacher position at my first school, and I've sort of been in that role ever since.
Okay, and as I've watched, you do a lot of stuff at home with your son doing technology stuff as well. It seems that we both are making cool things at home with our kids and going from there. And, I myself was a youngest child, so I didn't have any little siblings. So working with younger children, I never really had the opportunity until I moved into a role where I'm servicing PK to 12th grade. Yeah. I think my sweet spot personally is middle school. I don't know what it is. I just like working with those sixth, seventh, mm-hmm. and eighth grade students. Definitely work with anybody and everybody, but I don't know. There's just something about that age level for me. And I think from the sounds of it, it's the same for you for elementary age kids.
Yeah.
So one of the big things that I've stumbled onto, you know, following you on Twitter and seeing the great things that you're doing specifically looks at AR and VR as well as the makerspace stuff.
Yes.
How'd you find yourself on that path, getting the exposure to those, and what are some of your favorite tools to use with students?
Yeah, so I think, I'm as a tech integration specialist, as a lover of technology, I'm always try to be on the cutting edge, you know, trying new things as they come out. And I don't know, maybe it was about 4 or 5 years ago when I think my first sort of introduction to VR specifically at that time was Google Expeditions. And Google Expeditions. Before that, I think it was Google Street View, and the ability to take us to view a Google Street View image in virtual reality on your phone, and you know, with the cardboard headset. And I think that was my introduction to VR. And then experiencing that really opened my eyes to the potential of what VR could do in our classrooms. And for me, as a technology teacher, you know, when I see these or experience these new things, my first thought, I always go to, you know, not just how can I expose my students to this? How can we get students to use this stuff? But how can I get my students to create these things themselves? I think that's always the direction as teachers we should be striving for, is how can we get kids to create this stuff? Because, you know, that's going to be the different career paths that they'll have, you know, they'll have opportunities to explore. And yeah, and so VR, you know, it had some amazing potential back then. It was just, you know, phones and cardboard. It's definitely grown since then, you know, back a couple of years ago. But yeah, so Street View Expeditions came soon after that, and that really opened the doors for VR, at least VR consumption in schools. And just that you know, what VR does, it opens up, it, well, not opens up, it sort of tears down the four walls of the classrooms and gives teachers and students the ability to pretty much travel and go anywhere they want, and, you know, even beyond our planet, you know. My focus and my passion has been on AR and VR, you know, ever since. I've spent a lot of time exploring and creating and sharing about it with other educators at conferences, and, you know, working with students.
And I wonder if it's made a difference being your geographic location and how you're so far away from everything else, if the opportunities of virtual reality were even more intensified, since you can't just hop in a car and drive to the next state over to go see something. You have to fly or take a boat or something.
Yeah, I definitely think that's been a major impact on why I've explored AR and VR. Yeah, being in Hawaii, being in the middle of, you know, of an ocean thousands of miles away from any other place, and just, you know, it's really hard for our students in Hawaii and in general to go anywhere else and to experience. I mean, we, you know, not necessarily in my school, but in other schools in the state, you know, there are kids that have never left their island, you know, and they may or may not ever get that chance as a child to leave their island and see what the rest of the world has to offer them. And so, you know, VR, you know, has that potential to expose them to what's beyond their home and their community.
Now you're making my brain roll a little bit here and getting a lesson plan idea rolling. Cause you know, in our area, a popular thing pre-COVID was that eighth graders go to Washington, D.C. You know, for us, mm-hmm. it's about a 9-hour bus ride, 9 or 10 hours, something like that. Make a weekend out of it, and the kids go visit all the landmarks and everything. So in years past, I've worked with our eighth graders where we've done Tinkercad designs of the different monuments and memorials that they were going to go visit in D.C. We would 3D print those by about the size of your palm of your hand. They'd work in groups doing research, create a video or a comic book or something along those lines to show what they learned about the monuments and memorials, excuse me there. Mm-hmm. And what we were planning on doing this year, I was actually supposed to go on the trip back in April, was having those kids essentially be the tour directors once we got down there to DC. So mm-hmm. that's cool. Not impossible for you guys to do where you're at. It's just mm-hmm. going to be tremendously expensive to hop in a plane to go that far.
Yeah.
How neat would it be if my students created a virtual reality environment so you could experience that, and they can demonstrate their knowledge to your students saying, hey, here's what we learned about the Washington Monument, and this is what it looks like. And then you could do the flip side, the same thing back.
Yeah.
Your students can demonstrate.
Yeah. So I've been working on a very similar project like that here in Hawaii for the past 2 years with a couple, two other history teachers at my school. I mean, we had that same exact idea. I mean, Hawaii has a rich history. There's ancient Hawaii and the culture and the people surrounding that, and then just the history of, how Hawaii became a state and the controversy and the history and the different perspectives surrounding those, surrounding all that. And there are, many historical locations across all of the islands of Hawaii. And, when our Hawaiian history teachers go to teach those about the history and the locations and the people, I think every history teacher deals with this. We have the books, we have the pictures, maybe we have some videos and some text, and it's not very exciting and engaging for students to read about history in textbooks or to view pictures. It wasn't for me in my history class very exciting to learn about the history of my state.
We did it because we had to.
We had to, right? So, our whole idea was, well, what if we can't take our students to all of these places, especially other islands, what if we, brought these places to our students? And so the whole idea was, we, at the beginning of this project, was that the three of us, through a grant at my school, were able to travel to we call it the Big Island, which is Hawaii Island. It's the biggest island in our Hawaiian island chain. And we traveled there for 2 days and pretty much traveled the entire island and visited all of these historical locations that that's a part of their curriculum content. And we turned all of these places into virtual reality field trips. And then these history teachers, they have lots of connections with storytellers and historians and people that work with nonprofit organizations that try to preserve these locations. And so we actually tapped into them as experts and resources, and were able to interview them and get their perspectives and their stories and record them on video and audio. We built that into these VR field trips. And now, so we use those with our students in those Hawaiian history classes. Because we can't physically take them to all of these places, and it's been a really awesome project. And now last year we started having for the places that we were able to take the students last year on Oahu, we had the students create the virtual field trips based on their experience and the knowledge that they gained from those field trips, and we're packaging all that on this publicly accessible website where other teachers that teach the same content in their own schools can access this stuff and use it in their own curriculum.
I love it when I hear teachers sharing with each other.
Yes.
So in your experience, I really get the vibe of creation over consumption with you and you working with students on how they can create things. It's not just about using VR, but building it as well. Mm-hmm. How early on have you been able to successfully see students building, whether it's 3D printing or in VR or anything in the makerspace? Can kindergartners do it?
I haven't specifically worked with kindergartners on creating VR. I've seen other teachers do it and share about it through Twitter and Facebook. So I think it's definitely possible. I think for me, it's always, students will pretty much do whatever you ask them to do, and they'll use and learn whatever tool you want them to learn. And for me, it's always about the teacher's comfort level, right? As long as you're comfortable with it and you have an understanding of how that tool works and you have that passion to use it with your students, your students will pick up on it and they'll learn how to use it, right? And so I always tell people it's definitely doable in as early as kindergarten. It's all about a teacher's comfort level. And what I like to say, I think this sort of reflects on the C in your magic acronym. C stands for stay calm.
Stay calm. Right? Yep.
Don't be afraid. So for me, it's always about embracing the fear. right? As a teacher, we need to be able to embrace that fear and just push through it. And, you know, we don't necessarily have to be the experts. Our students can learn from each other as well, which is a big part of how I teach. But I think these things are definitely doable in kindergarten. I've done VR and AR projects with students as young as second grade.
So if somebody's listening and is getting a little confused by them, how would you define the difference between AR and VR?
Oh, good question. So in its basic terms, I like to describe VR, virtual reality, as a way to bring VR allows you to bring your to take your students anywhere, right? And AR allows you to bring anything to your students, right? And so virtual reality is basically you put yourself in a first person perspective in a physical location somewhere else in the world, or even beyond that. I mean, there's VR in outer space, there's VR inside the human body. And you sort of take on that first person perspective where you can, you know, virtually look all around you as if you're really standing in that spot. And so it has that ability to bring your students pretty much anywhere you want to bring them. And AR stands for augmented reality. And essentially it allows you to bring 3D objects into your real physical environment. So I say you can bring pretty much anything to your students through AR. So, you know, imagine I've done a lot of AR projects with science where, you know, we can bring, I don't know, like a
parts of the body or.
Yeah, exactly. Parts of the body. So like a skeleton, a 3D model of a skeleton, place it, you know, on a physical table in the classroom, and students can explore that skeleton through their device, through their device's camera. So that when they look through the device, they can see that 3D model, you know, laying on that table, and they could physically move around that 3D model and do things like manipulate it, copy it or move it around or change the way that they view it. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't heard that put in the way of almost like incoming and outgoing or inputs and outputs for thinking about AR and VR. And I love that. That works so well. If VR you having an out-of-body experience almost. you're going somewhere else. And then AR is Pokemon Go. All of a sudden there's a little Pokemon in front of you.
Exactly. Yeah.
That is AR. So I'm going to hold on to that one. If somebody ever asks me, and I'll give you a little shout out there anytime somebody ever brings it up with me. So how does a teacher, you've talked about embracing the fear and everything. So how can a teacher start converting their lessons that they've used in previous years to be more of a hands-on lesson in a makerspace or using AR, VR? What's your suggestion there for taking the first step or maybe a first way of tweaking a lesson?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's definitely small steps. And I think too that, you know, especially with AR, VR, the tool isn't the entire lesson, right? It's just like any other tool or multimedia that we strive to use in our lessons. It becomes a piece of that lesson. There's so much more involved in that lesson than just AR, VR, and, you know, whatever tools you want. But, you know, try to find a spot in that lesson where, you know, having students visit a place in VR might benefit a portion of that lesson, right? Or, you know, find a spot in that lesson where you could bring in a 3D artifact to your students through AR, and if that can benefit, you know, your lesson in any way, try to find a way to build that in. But it should, you know, it should be in baby steps, small steps, right? Find one section of that lesson where you think that tool or experience might work, and you know, give it a try. Don't be afraid to try it out, and you know, learn alongside your students. You know, our students have grown up with this technology. You know, they are, what do you call them, the
digital natives.
Yeah, that's it. The digital natives, right? It's in their everyday life, right? And they'll probably know more about it than you will, right?
And a lot of times they might be yeah. using it and they don't even already. Realize
yeah,
what
yeah.
it is. They just kind of exactly. do it because they've been doing it.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like you mentioned Pokemon Go. Our kids might be playing that already. They just don't know that is an augmented reality experience. They just see it as a game, you know?
Oh, the games they have compared to us playing Pong and Super Mario Brothers and everything.
Yeah, right.
The fun stuff they get. Oh, and then there's a, I think I noticed you playing it, but I haven't done it myself. The Mario Kart Home Circuit.
Oh, yes. I love that.
I don't really know anything about it, but is that essentially like a AR experience using Mario Kart?
Yeah, yeah. So like you, right. So the Mario Kart, the cart itself has a camera on the top. And as you drive around the camera, you view the camera through your Switch, and the game will augment the racing experience by placing other Mario Kart players on your screen, and it'll augment like the background with different scenes, and then of course you have your typical Mario Kart objects that you collect, like the shells and the stars, and you experience all of that through the screen and through the camera that's on the cart. So that's definitely an augmented reality experience. It's really cool.
Is it an actual physical like remote control car in your house?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So the cart is a physical. Wow. It's a physical cart that comes with the game.
And it has a camera on it.
Yep. Yeah, it's okay, so cool.
I might be running out to the store after we finish up recording this to go get that. Because that sounds awesome. That sounds like something that I'd love to play at home with the family. And
yeah, and what's really cool about it is it's not just a really cool way to play Mario Kart, but there's a creation aspect to it. So you know, it gives you these cardboard fold-out signs that you lay out and you build your track, right? So you don't just race pre-made tracks in the game like you know in Mario Kart.
You
have
to physically
you physically build tracks. Your own track in your house, and then of course you could what my son and I like to do is we would put obstacles in the track, and we would have it go under the kitchen table and down the hallway and back, and so it has this really cool potential for lots of creativity built into it.
Nintendo's got a way of doing that creation yep. as well as consumption type thing mm-hmm. with the was it the Labo? They had yes. that whole thing where you bought
Nintendo
cardboard
Labo.
And yep. did stuff at home with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was sitting down with my wife yesterday. We were playing, oddly enough, Mario Kart. And I was sitting there thinking about it. I'm like, you know what? If I go through, I've got the Game Boy Color, GameCube, DSi, the Wii, and now the Switch in my house. And for the other ones, I have a PlayStation 1, and that's it. So nonchalantly over the years, Nintendo has been involved in my life, and I don't consider myself a gamer. Yeah, I'm esports coach and everything like that, but that's not something I do regularly. But
yeah,
I'm getting more and more into it, especially with Rocket League here. I picked that up over break, and I'm enjoying that. So, wow, somehow we got completely off of AR VR, but spun it into esports there.
So. Well, I mean, it's okay because it shows AR VR is not just an education tool, right?
It's
becoming more of a general consumer product. You're finding it more and more in stores and in the games we play. Mm-hmm. And my wife likes to use when she shops online, and like just recently we purchased a carpet for our kitchen, and I think it was the Target app where you can take furniture and things like a carpet, and it has an augmented reality feature built in where you can place that carpet in your house through your device so that you get a better idea. A more realistic perspective of how it will look in your house. So we're starting to see, VR and AR become more of, a regular, consumer tool that gives us more unique perspectives and helps us to make better decisions with our purchases. And it's really cool to see those things. So that's why I feel like, as a teacher, it's sort of I feel like it's my responsibility to expose students to these tools, because it's becoming more and more part of their everyday life. And if they better understand how these tools work, and they have a little bit of an understanding and some experience and skill in creating these types of things, it's only going to benefit them more in the long run, of course.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you there. And I can think that there was a time I was watching a baseball game. I'm a huge Cleveland Indians fan, and I want to say they're playing like the Baltimore Orioles, and it was like in between innings, the camera's panning, and I just happened to notice a sign in the background, like by a concession area, and I paused it, and it said something about the AR experience for that ballpark. And that's where we're getting to. It's like, yeah, everywhere we go, they're building these things. So if you love baseball and you're interested in AR, there's opportunities out there for you where they're using those tools to interact with their attendees to make sure they're having a good experience, to give them opportunity to buy more gear or more swag. And it's just a whole wide open ball game. That's pardon the pun there with the ball game part, but it's endless. In the physical world, we're limited by space. We can only go certain width and height and length and all that stuff. But AR brings in this element of, we can drop in anything.
Yep.
And it's just a matter of having the imagination and do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, there we go. Now the brain's going again. Stop it, brain. And we can do stuff like that with our school, create experiences for those that can't be there or.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, are you ready for taking a spin on the magic wheel?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Okay, so I have all five letters in there. I'm going to give it a little spin here, and let's see where we land. Michael gets...
Drum roll.
Ding, ding, ding. Assess.
Oh.
So assess or assessment, what does that mean to you?
Oh, man. Well, so I teach in a makerspace. It's our design and technology lab. And assess, it's definitely a challenge in a makerspace. I think we're always, as teachers, our focus is assessing that final product, right? Like what the end goal is. But for my colleague and I, it's not right assessing what students create at the end, right? Because at the end, for us at least, our students are creating all different kinds of things, all different shapes and sizes, based on their own likes and passions and their own levels of creativity. And so what they make is very, very different from their peers, right? So it's hard to assess what they make in the end. So for us, it's been about figuring out a way to assess the process they go through to get to that end product, right? Because the process for the most part is the same for every kid. We're teaching them all the same skills. We're teaching them all how to use the same kinds of tools. And so for us, when we're not quite there yet, as a new space, with new tools and equipment. But yeah, it's for us, it's finding out a way to assess the process they go through, and not just the process, but their ability to reflect on and grow in that process and learn from their experiences and learning from their mistakes. We're still working on that in our space, figuring out we're building the curriculum and figuring out how we're going to assess different aspects of our curriculum, and then translate that into, of course, report cards. Uh, Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I have the same problems when it comes to technology lessons specifically too, where it's even with the finished product, it's like, okay, we want to do this, but what does that look like? Mm-hmm. And what one student does can be completely different than another. And when we talk about,
Go ahead. I didn't mean to trip. I was just saying, because you know, we don't, especially in a makerspace, we try to avoid the cookie cutter projects,
right?
Where every kid looks the same. We don't want that, right? Because I think, you know, for a lot of our kids, that sort of stifles their learning. If we just take them down this narrow path, this is what we want to do, and this is what we want you to create. I think, you know, for us, our main goal, our end goal for every student when they take our class and move through kindergarten through sixth grade is to come out of sixth grade and feel like I have the ability to make whatever I want and create whatever I want, you know, sort of that, you know, maker mentality that I'm capable and I have the skills and the knowledge to do this. And if I don't, I know how to figure it out and I can be resourceful, right? That's our end goal.
And it's such an internal thing that it's hard to, how do you slap an A on that or a B or a C or it's a tough one.
Yeah, definitely.
So I agree. It's a big thing with reflection, and we can all be better at that. Even if you think you reflect well on a daily basis, there's always something else you can reflect back on. But I guess the spin side of that is, if we spend all our time looking backwards, how are we supposed to move forwards? Yeah. But I think it's a healthy balance of both of them there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. How many years have you been teaching now?
Oh, is this my 14th or 15th year, I think? I tend to lose count.
Right. After I hit 10, I was the same way. I just know that I'm in lucky number 13 currently.
14. This is my 14th year.
Oh, look at that. We're right at about the same time there. Oh, so if you could travel back in time 15 years ago and you can see yourself finishing up college, getting ready to go out and get your first job, what advice would you give yourself or for teachers that are going to start in the next school year? What would you do differently, or what do you wish you would have learned going into it?
Oh, man. Good question. I think definitely to be flexible with your teaching. I think one lesson I would teach, or one thing I would want to let myself know, and then all of my classmates know, is that, you know, as teachers, I think one of the most important things we can do is share the things that we're doing. Right.
You know, don't live in a silo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And because, you know, it's, we as teachers, we should be constantly growing and improving upon our craft. And the only way to do that is to learn from each other. Right. And to learn from each other, we have to share with each other and not to be afraid to open up your doors and let others experience or learn from the things that you do, whether they're successes and even failures, mistakes. I think that's an important lesson that you know, every teacher would benefit from learning as they learn to become teachers.
Yeah. Remaining humble and remaining open.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. What about the flip side of that? You got teachers that are heading into the second semester here. They're ready to hang it up at the end of, you know, May or June, whenever that is. How do we keep them from hitting cruise control? How do they stay on top of their craft?
Oh, man. As they approach retirement? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah. Those that are getting ready to retire and they're leaning towards, I'll just sit back and hand out worksheets for the next 4 months and be done with it. How do we motivate them to stay on top of it?
You know, I think, you know, it, it kind of reminds me of one teacher. When I mentioned the project that I'm working on with two history teachers and creating VR, one of those teachers, she actually retired last year. And I was fortunate enough to work with her on this project. And she's sort of opened my eyes to, you know, what even a teacher that's in her very last year of teaching, and she knows, right, that retirement is just around that corner. It's just a school year away. But, you know, rather than sort of, you know, hunkering down and just doing what you know and you know, sticking to what you know, she instead did the exact opposite and said, you know what, I'm going to try a bunch of new things. I sort of think it's that like mentality that it's like, I've got nothing to lose, you know? I mean, trying new things isn't going to like totally destroy my teaching career, right? But, you know, I think for her it was like, you know, I have this opportunity, you know, it's almost over. You know, let's try this out and see what it does. And it's turned out great. We've created some amazing work that other teachers are now benefiting from, other students are benefiting from. And I think, you know, as a teacher, you know, to have that mentality that this is my opportunity to try new things and to do some stuff that I just haven't been able to try in years past. She was, you know, it was awesome to see her, push through that and, you know, be successful with it.
And it's a project that you're going to use and use and reuse year after year after year. And she's able to be remembered on a very high note.
Exactly.
Going forward with that. Yeah. So kudos to her. High five. Virtual high five from thousands of miles away. Oh, my. So it's a tough time right now. Like I see you involved with a lot of conferences, but everything's virtual right now.
Yeah.
Do you have any upcoming conferences or events that you're taking part in?
No, not really. I sort of, you know, I mean, with the pandemic and everything, and I sort of stepped back from that right now and just have been focusing a lot of attention on school. You know, it's taken a lot of work to get from, you know, being online last school year to at least, you know, at my school, we went back to in-person learning back in September. And that's been a huge feat. And it's been a lot of work. And on top of that, you know, we opened a brand new makerspace, two brand new buildings at the same time. And, I've just been focusing a lot of attention on that. So I haven't been spending too much time on the conference or workshop circuit. I'm crossing my fingers that ISTE, will be in the summertime. I'm looking forward to that. And we'll see how things go. But yeah, nothing coming up too soon.
Okay. And you got my brain rolling a little bit there with the pandemic and your makerspace. That reminds me of you were doing the same thing over there in Hawaii that I was doing over here in my area with other schools. And that was 3D printing the PPE for the local frontline people.
Yeah.
And you guys have done a lot of cool, innovative things with that. What was that experience like for you?
Well, I wasn't really a part of that. But our school, we had an amazing upper school team that they pretty much created a 3D printing farm in our upper school makerspace. And we, I forget what the count is now, but it's in the thousands of, we 3D printed parts and laser cut parts to make our own face shields. And so at my school, we laser cut
too.
Yeah. So we laser cut the foam and, the plastic, you know, shield portion. And then we 3D printed, the parts for the buckles,
the frame,
and straps in the back. So we pretty much manufactured all of the face shields that we use on campus because everyone on our campus has to wear a shield and a mask at all times. And so every face shield has been manufactured in house. And then of course we were also producing face shields for the community. So for different hospitals, for first responders, you know, clinics and care homes and things like that. So we've produced thousands upon thousands of them since probably, honestly, May or June. Yeah. It's pretty amazing. And it's sort of it's like a testament to like what you want students to be able to feel like they can do in a makerspace, that, you know, rather than trying to fight the crowds and, you know, buy face shields, we can make our own. You know, it took some effort. It took a team, took multiple versions, but you know, we got it down to a fine science, and yeah, I mean, it's a pretty amazing feat, but it's possible.
Yeah. That's a huge thing I see with a lot of the people that are in the makerspace realm, specifically like the 3D printing thing. We have the face shields that have been done since March. Mm-hmm. But I was just reading earlier today about a story on TikTok where Jimmy Choi, I believe his name is, he's was in the American Ninja Warrior for a few seasons. He's an elite athlete, but he's been suffering from Parkinson's disease since 2003. Oh. And he posted a TikTok where his medicine is this teeny tiny pill, and it's hard for somebody with Parkinson's while they're shaking to try and get that pill out of there. So he posted this video to TikTok, and then another TikToker, Brian Aldridge, took it upon himself to learn how to use CAD software in a couple days and made a new pill box, pill container, designed to help those with Parkinson's be able to simply twist so it isolates a single pill, and then it's got a tube in it that they can just turn it up and get the pill into their mouth without having to grab it with their fingertips.
That's so cool. And then
he put the design out there, said, "Hey, I don't have a 3D printer. Can anybody do this?" Thinking he'd get a couple responses. He woke up the next morning to thousands of responses saying, "Hey, I've got an uncle that could use this. I've got, you know, some other relative or somebody they knew," and it just had this giant impact, and it's grown in a matter of a few short weeks. They're on version 5.2 already. They're running fundraisers for the Michael J. Fox Parkinson's Disease Research Foundation. And they've also reached out to patent lawyers to make sure that it stays open source. And that's one of the big things I've found in that whole makerspace community is, we share with each other. Mm-hmm. It's not isolated to just us, and I want to profiteer off of it. Sure, I need help covering my costs and everything, but it's just one of the things that touches your soul as you watch the communities grow together worldwide, really.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, we live in this day and age where, like you said, a person can spend a day or two and learn how to use CAD software and design something. You know, gone are the days when that person would need to go and find a place to take a class on how to use CAD software. You know,
right?
There are hundreds, if not thousands, of videos out there of people teaching you how to do it in a matter of hours. And it's not about, you know, finding that class or a teacher to teach me how to do it. It's about being resourceful. You know, and again, like, back to that you know, maker mentality, and that the goals of a makerspace is, you know, our goal is to help students realize that potential and to learn how to be resourceful in that way. You know, it's not our job to, you know, I don't see it as my job to teach them how to use that CAD software. It's my job to help them feel like they're capable of learning it on their own and supporting each other in those efforts and finding the resources that are already out there to support them.
Yeah, it's such a critical piece as they learn and grow, and it's the world that they're going to have 10, 15, 20 years from now. We can't even fathom what it is right now.
Yeah.
There's going to be maker spaces in everybody's house. They're going to be 3D printing their own sandals. They're going to be, it's just going to be phenomenal.
I mean, yours already, I have a few kids at my school who have their own 3D printer. That's just, you know, it sits right next to their Xbox or right next to their Switch charging station. It's just one of those things that's in a kid's room now. And you know, now we're starting to see, you know, laser cutters are slowly, but they're getting there to that consumer price point where, you know, you can buy one and put it on your countertop or your kitchen table, an actual laser cutter.
Yeah, that's definitely the next thing on my wish list is getting a laser cutter. I haven't gotten to use one myself yet.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, awesome. Is there anything we missed, and how can my audience get in touch with you?
Oh, so I'm, of course, I'm on social media. I'm at EdTechNocation. That's my my handle across Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. I manage my own AR/VR resource hub for teachers called the it's at www.arvredhub.com. And pretty much, you know, everything I do and create, I share through that website, you know, because I don't want it to sit in my own silo. I want other educators to feel empowered and to embrace that fear and try new things. And so that website is my way of sharing what I do with others.
Are we able to see that, stuff you're doing on the island over there?
Oh, yes. Yep. It's all linked up in there. Yep.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely. Have to check that out when we finish up here.
Yeah.
So great. Thank you so much for being on today. I really appreciate you taking the time away from your family and everything to have this little chat with me and share some great ideas with educators everywhere.
Of course. Thanks for having me, Kevin. This is a lot of fun.
Absolutely. All right, audience. Now it's your turn. Go out there and make it happen. Thank you for listening to the Magic Potion Podcast. This podcast was created using Anchor FM. Please subscribe and leave comments with your thoughts and ideas from the classroom. Until next time, get out there and make it happen.